This channel one over. Channel one over. I'm just setting this up as a catch-all. Channel one over. Channel one over, and I'm just setting this up as a catch-all. This channel one over, and this is Miss Judy Lee. And it's a surprise visit, and it's surprise reporting this Sunday afternoon for supper, the 23rd of May, 1971. Channel one over, Miss Judy Lee. A surprise visit for supper this Sunday evening, the 23rd of May, 1971. Channel one over, Judy Lee. The supper this 23rd of May, Sunday for supper, 1971. Channel one over, Judy Lee. Sunday night for supper, this channel one over, the 23rd of May, 1971.
Take them in a huge oven and show.
But I've seen your bowls.
My son.
They're beautiful.
Yeah. And they don't taste, you know, funny at all to me.
One drop. I generally have just a little bit that I can work on and not have to make any.
Now, I'll check on that, but I'm sure that's what I understood when we bought them. Becky's got a whole set of them.
They're black.
They're black, base.
Like this? Plates and everything?
Yeah, they have plates. They're like pottery, you know, that type of thing. They aren't like, you know, like this. They're just black bowls.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, I bought a little, it's like a little, I don't know what, Tinto set, I guess, with a little black tray and little black cups with faces carved on the side from down there. And some salad bowls and a big salad bowl. But we have quite a bit of the stuff.
And do you use it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it's black.
Yeah.
They do make a lot of things. You're carving things out of things that they have.
Did Mom tell you about the pots we brought back? You know those old pots? There's one on the piano.
Yeah.
Nerino pots. Did Mom tell you about that?
No.
Becky, when I was up in Washington, we went through the Smithsonian, and in the Latin American history part of it, we saw one of these pots like we brought back. I brought back three of them and gave one to Dennis Winslow's mother. He's an art. And Becky gave Daddy one of hers, so I've got two, and Daddy's got one, and Becky and Gerald have a couple of them. And we saw one like it up in the Smithsonian, and so Becky and Gerald took theirs up there. And the man told him, we understood when we bought them they were about 150 years old, 100 years to 150 years old. And the man told him that they were around close to 1,000 years old. Close to 1,000 years old. They're from the Nerino culture.
Well, did you buy them as antiques?
Bought them at a store, and well, sorta paid $6 for three of them. $6 for three of them. And each one of them is about 1,000 years old.
Mm.
And you know, the funny thing about it is, you know, I brought stuff back, and Becky and Gerald brought stuff back, and they shipped stuff back. And the pots, the things that I bought down there, like I bought a couple of these clay pigs at the same place we bought these black bowls. You know, I bought a clay pig. And the clay pig broke, you know, cracked. But these old pots didn't crack an inch. And I brought back that old bird whistle that's supposed to be about 500 years old, a beautiful little bird whistle. And that didn't crack either. And the stuff that Becky and Gerald shipped back, they had several pots that they purchased in Peru that were supposed to be old. And they were supposed to be, but they weren't sure about them at all. And those cracked. But these old Nerino pots and the ones that are really old didn't bother them a bit.
That's fine.
Didn't bother them a bit.
And that's the one you wanted anyhow.
Huh?
That's the ones you wanted anyhow.
That's right. Wanted to keep up with.
How did you get into all that? Had you studied it or anything?
What, the old pot?
Yeah.
No, see down there, and it's hard for people up here to understand, but you know, when you get in a culture down there like that, and money is so scarce, you know, and they don't even think about preserving. I mean, they do, but not to the extent that we do. You know, you find an old Indian pot up here, you know, in good condition, you keep it. Down there, they just sell it because they'd rather have the $2 than the old pot. You know, uh-huh. They'd rather have food in their stomach than an old pot hanging around. So they dig these things up out of Indian graves, and then they ship them to the shops in Bogota, and then they sell them. And they have some very, you can tell that they're all from the same culture by the design, you know, on the thing.
And can you tell?
I could recognize another one just by the, I couldn't say for sure, but I could more or less point it out and say that was from the Nariño culture just by the way that it's designed and things like this.
And you can still see the design?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's still
there. Yeah. It's, you know, just an Indian, like an Indian pattern, you know, on the side of the pot.
And still there.
But, like those beads that Becky and Gerald bought, they paid about $60 for this. It's called Santa Marta beads. And they bought a particular set. And what they do is they have archaeologists go down there and go into these Indian graves and dig out these things, and then they pay the farmer who owns the land where the Indian grave is, you know, maybe $25-$30 to dig. And then they take these things out, and as they find them, they put them in a pattern, see, just the way they find them. And then they restring them and sell them. And Becky and Gerald have one with a little duck on it, a piece out of Indian gold, real Indian gold, right in the middle in these big, fancy Santa Marta beads. Beautiful things that are supposed to be about 2,000 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't heard you all talk about
Well, you all come over and see him sometime.
Well, don't you know you all were over here that when you came back, but I don't remember you saying anything like that.
Well, see, we didn't know how old those pots were until about 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
I mean, actually, the actual age of them, we thought they were about 100, 150 years old. You know, like that branding iron I brought you.
Yeah.
And now, I don't know actually that thing's 80 to 100 years old. It could be older. It couldn't, you know, might not be, and you probably never know. But it's just like those pots. You took to take a chance on it and bring them back, and then you happen to run across somebody like up this man up at the Smithsonian and find out the actual age on it.
And Gerald took them to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to find out about that bird whistle. That's the most beautiful piece of work I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful old bird whistle.
It just makes you appreciate that old
That's right.
That old culture, pottery, that old there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, just like the two pots that I have are from the Nariño culture. Now this bird whistle is from the Tumaco culture, which is supposed to be one of the oldest cultures down there in South America. And that it's an, you know, you can tell by looking at it, it's, you know, it's an entirely different culture just by seeing the thing. No pattern on it. It was must have been like a child's toy. But it's about that high, guy, and you can still blow it, and it works.
Yeah.
And it's the most beautiful carved little bird, about that big, just sitting up. Gorgeous thing.
He had a feel for birds.
Evidently. And, you know, they just bury these things in the graves with these people when they die.
Yeah.
I'd love to go back down there and bring some more of that stuff back, just to keep.
Yeah, next time
I'm gonna stock up.
Waste your time.
No. And I'm telling you guys, some of those shops we went into down there had these. Now, the Nariño pots that we brought back, mine are one of the biggest ones, about this big, and it's like this. But they had some like this, the most gorgeous pot. Now, a lot of them were cracked and chipped, but some of them were just gorgeous. Just the most gorgeous pots. And, of course, you know, you think, well, why take back that something that big and you don't know how, you know, 200 years old? Big deal. But then you get back here and find out that it's not, they were made around the year 1000 A.D. But, you know, Becky and Gerald brought back some They saw them in a window and paid about $3 or $4 for them, and they think they're Inca operating tools that they used to do surgery, with, you know, on people's heads and their little operating tools. Fascinating things. I think if I went back to school, I'd go back into archaeology or something like that. Because I sure think it's fascinating.
No, I just do that on the side.
Yeah, but I'd like to, you know, I wouldn't mind going, you know, being sent back down there. But they say if you go up in those hills, you know, to dig up the graves, there's several places up around Santa Marta, up on the coast, that you can go up and, you know, there's several tribes around in there, and they'll let you go up and dig up graves if you pay them so much. But if you try to take any of that gold, they'll just slit your throat right there by the grave.
If you what?
Try to take the gold. You know, they'll let you dig up the graves, find the graves and dig them up, but they want the gold. The Indians do. And if you try to pocket it, from what I understand, you get it right there on the spot. Just, I don't know if they cut your throat or not, but they'll kill you for it. Of course, they'll kill you on the streets of Bogota, too, so it doesn't make too much difference. Not much difference at all. But I'd like to go down there and dig around. I think it'd be interesting.
It's hard to realize that it's actually dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, but it is. It can be very dangerous.
Yeah. Well, can you go with a guide or somebody who knows?
Yeah, I imagine you could find one. Yeah.
And then if I was there, I wouldn't know what they were telling me.
Yeah.
Were they mad at me
or happy?
Shoot me or why?
Well, let's just eat inside. Yeah, I don't have to wag it out. Do you like your steak burnt up or just
medium? Medium. Fine. Thank you, Sophie. Well, you know, and there are places down, you know, around the Amazon that they have those. They have a tribe down there. I can't recall the name. That are just like Stone Age people. That's how, you know, they're so primitive that it's almost unbelievable. And there. Can be pretty primitive, I guess.
Well, they wouldn't hunt outside us, would they?
Probably they wouldn't hunt out. If you went in there, I imagine they'd kill you.
Yeah. You know, people like that, I read in Melville, those early things he did in the South Seas, he thought that was a little paradise, and it turned out to be taboos, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you'd run into. You'd violate their taboos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you'd get it.
You'd get it. You'd be dangerous to them. For them,
this, threaten them. Yeah. This, we, you know, when Nancy and I went down there, we didn't realize it, but on the same plane with us were the two guys that had written this book, The Cocaine Eaters. One of them's name is Brian Mossler, and I can't think of the other one's name. But anyway, they were down on the plane with us. But anyway, we found out after we got down there that they had written this book. And you ought to read it, guy. It's fascinating. It's about one of the tribes that, you know, a very primitive tribe in South America. Fascinating thing. You know, the way they live and, you know, when people die, how they bury them and things like this. And how they, you know, the whole thing is based on the fact that they don't have enough to eat, and so they eat cocaine. And their lifespan is, you know, very, very short. And they eat that, I guess it's cocaine weed, you know, the drug, to keep them from getting so hungry.
Oh, yes.
Just interesting as it can be to me.
Well, you know, in the C3 book, in the college English book, they had this article, and it was the report of these people who lived with the old culture for several years and foundation. And I remember one of the boys looked into they were just a little bit in the theater, and they had all those marvelous photographs. And It was so circumstantial that it was all just painful.
Hmm.
I can't remember now just how it goes. my education comes mostly from those that college English. They have such nice articles.
It's an interesting book, if I recall it.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And of course, when I get into that, I read it a little closer than I would if I were at buffet.
How am I ever going to eat all this?
It's not much.
Well, it looks like a tiny bean.
Yeah, I don't know about it. Have a steak cooked up. I forgot about it, Judy.
Judy, I know it
was. If I was going to build any steak, I think I forgot about it. Guys, what are you going to drink? I don't have any tea.
Water's fine.
Okay.
Water's fine.
I don't drink fish, so it doesn't bother me.
Well, this looks good.
Faye is a great drinker here.
I don't have to drink chocolate.
That's a drink.
Y'all go ahead.
Right.
Don't wait on me.
No, it's good,
Faison. Faye, are these hot potatoes or are these collapsed potatoes?
These are collapsed potatoes.
This is the season over there, you know.
Oh, is that?
Mm-hmm. Right in the middle of it.
It's ironical to fix potatoes like, I mean, to have potatoes like that when we've got so many potatoes rolling out of here. Fresh.
Is Gerald and Becky going to? They'll settle down here for a year or two, and they'll get their urge again, won't they?
They'll pardon?
They'll get the urge again, won't they?
I don't know. They called this morning and want to buy a house. Looking into buying a house up there.
Yeah.
Look. They were talking about going to going back to Rio de Janeiro next summer, and they asked me if I wanted to go along, and of course I said yes. But
has he studied this?
What?
Calendar.
Mm-mm.
Becky.
Mm-mm. We just know what they've picked up along the way.
So, I think it's more fun that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they really got interested in it, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my luck used to be get interested in something like that, and you'll run into a book with pictures in it. That,
That's the best I can do for you.
Okay, I don't want to
say that.
I'm fine.
I tell you the best ones I run into for England. Anything about a British Museum is nicer done. You know, the tower and the... I'd have to get all those things.
That's right.
Say thing?
Mm-hmm.
You eat this because I can't eat it. I'm content.
Not even with your beans?
Mm-mm.
I can't imagine. I'm starving. Yeah. Would it work?
I don't know.
If not, there's one over there on the
side. Yeah, it works fine.
Is your mama interested in these?
Well, I don't think she's as interested as the rest of us, you know. She enjoys it, but I don't think she'd like to go down there and dig up Indian graves. That type of thing, you know.
Well, you never know.
That's true.
Children never know, understand the parents very well. Or maybe the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Maybe both ways. I've heard that there's some Indian caves down near Reddick.
Oh.
But
well, she went down there. She and Bob both went down there.
Who?
Your mom.
What you mean, to South America?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
But she didn't find it as fascinating as we did, I don't think. You know, she just enjoyed the trip.
What about his dad?
Yeah, he enjoyed it. I mean, he likes the old idea of old pots very much.
He done that around here.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
He's the one that got you started.
Same thing.
Or did you all get him started?
I don't know. I can't remember, but we both enjoy it.
Look at himself, Oleana.
I haven't heard him talk about the pots.
No, well, you'll have to come see him, Dr. Zerf.
I guess that's
really interesting.
Where do you keep
them? I keep mine on my dresser. And Daddy has his on the piano.
Yeah.
deliberately didn't give myself an onion because I didn't want to eat one. And here I am. This is sure good, Faith. Are these pole beans?
Mm-hmm. Fresh.
But you really liked it, as I remember you saying, both of
us. I love them. I would love to go back.
But you don't want to stay long.
Well, I'd like to go back and teach down there for a year, but I don't want to go by myself. You know?
Well, it looks like that's the best way to go if you want to see things.
Well, it is, Guy. It is. But, you know, to go down there in a foreign country and, you know, just be learning the language with,
Why?
That's too scary.
Scary?
With the ladrones and the banditos.
Well, you know the language pretty well already.
Not really. And it's,
You read the newspaper.
It's an awful strain on you to get down there, you know, and get set up and find yourself a maid. But it's just, you know, living by yourself.
Oh, you're the thing about being sort of scary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you. What I found in China. You see, I spent several years in China with Uncle Sam, with the army. And I found the way to get up and get around there, for me, was through the YMCA. They had YMCA's all over, everywhere. And everywhere you find a YMCA, there's someone to take care of you.
Hmm. That's the thought. I didn't know you'd been in China.
Well, you don't know much about me.
Mm-mm.
I've also been in Africa.
India.
Have you really?
Oh, yes. We'll talk about it sometime.
I don't know whether y'all are teasing me or not.
I didn't settle down to it. I lost the use of most of my faculties.
He didn't settle down to the game of Florida.
Now that is one place I would love to go, and that's India. I would love to go to India.
It's the last place I'd want to go.
Really?
Oh, yes. Well, you want to go there for?
Well, I think that they have so many people over there, like South America, that so really know some fine arts, you know, like wood carving and things like this. And just to, you know, shop for the typicos, that's what I like to, you know.
All I saw that was Indian over there in India, I'm going to give you the willies, just look at it.
Well, did you ever go out in the scrub?
I was out in the scrub most of the time. Oh, they have three-headed things, and the sex organs is always important, and you get all sorts of the bellies swell. Well, even that beautiful.
Well, I'd just like to see it.
Anything else, Mama? Tune in.
Mm-hmm.
In China, it's just commonplace Chinese. They're first rate.
Well, I'll tell you, if the rest of the world's anything like it, I sure would like to see it.
Well, And let me tell you,
it's the only thing that's fascinating.
It sounds like it's close by, but it's about as far as those other places, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a little bit closer. Now, I'm not sure, because I don't know how far it is from here to... How far is it from, like, New York to...
Well, it's more than 3 hours.
By jet. We'll see, then it's further. And, of course, that also depends on where you go down there.
They have Bogota right up at the
top.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
When you go down to Rio, it's to about a 5 or 6 hour jet trip.
Yeah. Then what goes on down is the school quiet now?
Well, it's rocking along toward the end. It's
gonna make it. It's gonna get out. Going to work. Going to get through the year.
Well, I hope so. We had a carnival about 2 weeks ago, and I've never been organizing one or anything. And our room was in charge of cooking and selling hamburgers. Well, we had the hamburgers, and I thought, well, got down there, and I thought, well, you just need, one person an hour. So I signed up for 4 mothers to cook hamburgers. They said they'd do it. Mm-hmm. Well, got down there, and this took about 5:30, and about 6:15, 10 minutes after 6, we started selling hamburgers. And I mean to tell you, there were 4 people behind that booth working like dogs the whole time. I have really learned my lesson after that night. And I thought, boy, I'm just going to be able to enjoy this carnival tonight. And I fried hamburgers for 4 solid hours.
You thought you'd passed on?
Oh, Lord, yeah. That was horrible.
Why did you miscalculate so much?
Well, I didn't have any idea that people would, first of all,
come.
Yeah.
Secondly, it's the first carnival the school's ever had, so I don't know whether people come. Secondly, after, most people eat, a lot of people eat, about 5:36. They don't eat at 10 o'clock at night. And finally, I just had to say, I'm sorry. I'm not selling. It was after 10:30, and they were still buying hamburgers. There's anything to beat it.
Oh, you want beans?
Mm-mm, I'm fine, so. Well, that's sure. I'm going to have half the army down there cooking hamburgers if I'm in charge of it.
Well, they like school events.
Mm, well, they do. And I didn't think they were going to show up. And I mean to tell you, there was a mess of people there.
Right.
And took in over $1,300.
What?
Took in over $1,300.
Did you get to see any of the carnival?
Mm-hmm. Finally broke away and went around, and looked at it. But they had a good time.
What were we talking about down there? We were talking about the Boys Canal, some connection. Was that in connection with the school?
Barge Canal.
Yeah. Not that you were sitting up here, Nick was here.
We were talking about pollution. O.D. Right. Huff, wasn't that it?
That's right.
Oh, yes.
Pollution. And he was talking about, yes, sir.
About old O.D. Huff.
That's right. Fine, he's on.
Well, what's going to happen to all that fire of mine?
Scientific.
I don't know how you can have any more pollution to the spray.
They had a warrant out for his arrest. OD. For, read it in the paper.
forging checks or something. Why, Judy?
Well, you mean his boy?
No, him. Boy's name is Jimbo.
You know the boy?
Vaguely. Very vaguely. But you know, I've gotten my first real taste of the political squeeze, I guess you could call it. You know, we talked about pollution in my room. And my kids, I feel they have a good, thorough understanding about it. And they know the word ecology and pollution. And they know all, you know, different types of pollution and what it does and why it's bad and this and that and the other. And we've talked about it. And so I mentioned to the principal one day, and of course she's a very wise woman, and she lets you find your own way around. She won't tell you something, she lets you find it out. You know, she won't let the axe fall on your head, but she'll let you know that the axe is up there, that type of situation. So she, I told her what we were up to, and I said, well, you know, my kids are so excited about this, I think it would be a good idea if we wrote Mr. Huff a letter or something and, you know, talk, you know, discuss this business about him polluting the school and everything and all the air. And she said, well, Judy, she said, I have one suggestion for you before you send those letters, before you have your children write your letters. Take a poll in your room and find out what your kids' parents do. And about 3/4 of them work for ODF. We didn't write any letters. Oh, no, no way we're going to write any letters.
You don't mean that many people work for
a lot of them. A lot of them pick, you know.
You mean his industries are that large?
Well, he's got, I asked several children say that their parents pick the oranges.
Yeah.
Some of them, one of them's father is responsible for taking the truck around and loading up the pots with the fuel. The diesel fuel, you know, things like this. And you just can't have the kid write the boss a letter and say, we don't like your pollution, when the father works for it. Fire him so quick it'd make the head spin.
Oh, he wouldn't fire him.
I bet he would.
Oh, he wouldn't fire him.
You don't think?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to risk it.
Sorry, she put the squeeze on you.
Well, if now you know about it, you wouldn't want to do that, but what you ought to do is get him to come down there and talk to him about pollution.
You think he would?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about anything. That's what I ought to do up there at the campus. And I never do it. Because I'm always behind schedule. And I know some of them. I'm just going to throw the book out the window some term and just invite the people in there to talk. If I could teach the second term of it, you see, then we could do that. They'd have the background for it.
What is this you're teaching, guy?
Why am I teaching? it wouldn't be about pollution necessarily. No, my interest would be a little different to getting people there. But it'd still be the same thing. You see, what I like is to hear them talk, just talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you take somebody who knows about cattle and they'll tell you about horse trading. There's one case after another, you see. And you just wonder, how in the world they ever did so much horse trading. But I wouldn't necessarily go into pollution. Well, I could, you know, along with that. They have groups up there, student groups, who mm-hmm. who do those things.
Oh, you know, reporting is part of your English reading.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, your stories, or your reporting, or your experiences. Oh.
Let me tell you, it just occurred to me one time, I forget who was here. That if I don't know. I don't think you are here. If I could go on the truck with
Vladimir Levine were here, and if you could go on a truck with Henry,
with Henry,
around the little store,
on one of those Eli Whip trucks,
mm-hmm.
and keep out of the way so it wouldn't be conspicuous, and all, and listen to Henry, you know, you wouldn't want to, you know, burden him. But just pick up a few little comments now and then.
Because he goes to all these little stores.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Eli Witt, those fellows are still personable. They don't go in.
Take the order and leave. They chew the fat a while.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. Judy. That's it.
Yes. It's still on that old
mm-hmm.
basis.
And not much of that.
You ever go down and talk to old man Thrasher down in Micanopy?
I don't get much out of it.
I've never heard him talk, but no.
Well, this group of girls, when I was at the university, were going to do a study. It was for social studies in the elementary school is what the title of the course was. And, of course, we had to devise some way to get people interested in something, certain garbage or something. But anyway, this one group had decided that they would do something on Micanopy. And they went down to see old man Thrasher, and old man Thrasher wouldn't let them in the store. He thought that they were he wouldn't let them take pictures. He said that he knew about how people worked in this new modern time, and that they took pictures, and then they'd come back that night and use those pictures to rob him. You know, that they would know where the windows and the doors were, and all they wanted to do was take pictures, you know. The inside, he's got that old safe in there, and oh no. He thought he knew about the hippies and about the robbers. He knew about those people. They were going to rob him.
No, I didn't know about that.
He's not. That man's so old his bones creak. Aunt Fefe, no, I'm just crunching on it. That's all.
I have talked, let me tell you, Judy, I've talked to Mr. Thrasher, and from time to time, he says right nice, interesting little things. But he gives it to you in such small doses.
It's almost not worth waiting around for.
It's not worth waiting around,
uh-huh.
You know.
That's
other
right.
People, if you want to hear him talk. No doubt but what he knows it, see.
Mm-hmm.
He and his daddy, I suppose, are just the old figureheads there. They've had that store, and they've traded. Let's see, his daddy, for a long time, turned the store over to this Thrasher. He got out on the countryside, and he traded horses and mules and goats and anything like that. And once you get into the trading side of it, you know, you really do something that people never forget. I talked to Woody Coleman was over here one time, came over and got some hay. I just gave him some. And he could give you all the circumstances about buying some horses and mules from Mr. Sasha.
Hmm.
It was clear in his mind as if he'd done it yesterday.
Hey, don't fix me anything now.
Shall I have a ice cream?
I'm full.
Give her.
No. I really can't eat it. I'm so full. It was delicious. And I appreciate it. I can't eat any ice cream. I'll just pop. Well, did you ever get a chance to talk to old man Peace up here in Micanopy before he died?
No, he was, before I got to him, he was a little past good.
Good talk.
Oh, he was, he and that old lady,
yes,
cook.
Yes.
Boy, we used to go over there and they'd just talk and talk and tell you about that house and about the Civil War. And you could just listen to him,
yes,
you know, for days almost. Just, yes, the most fascinating person in the world. And then they'd get out the thing was it. You go over there, you know, and they'd talk to you for a couple hours. And then at the very end, it was kind of like, you know, the ice cream after the dinner. They say, you want to see the rings they used to tie the slaves, you know, the prisoners to the wall with. And then they'd bring out those big old rings,
yeah,
and show them to you. And it was real,
yeah,
nice.
I remember Miss Cook. I was in revival with her one time down there. I remember she got the spirit so strong. I tell you what, a lot of her old friends came. And it just brought all those good old days back to mind.
Back,
you know, she could, I was sitting over there close to her, and she could hardly contain herself.
Oh, heavy.
Well, you know, I get Mother Lee. When Mother Lee comes up, I get her out on the porch, and she starts telling me stories, and I'll tell you, I just sit there and just take them all in.
What kind of stories?
Oh, the thing she tells her, she talks about, you know, when she was a little girl, and how her grandfather used to make all of her toys out of wood, you know, and he'd carve them,
uh-huh,
things like this, and doll houses and little doll beds and things. And just, oh, she goes on. She's telling me one time about this old woman, a wealthy old woman. Now, this is what her grandmother, who raised her, told her, see. So this is an old story.
Oh, yeah.
See, her grandmother told her, and she's telling me. And this was before she was born, but this, during the Civil War, this fairly wealthy woman up there, someplace in South Carolina, died. And they put the body in the thing and brought it to the house, and somebody was sitting up with it that night, and the woman got up and got out of the coffin. She wasn't dead, see? So, okay, she's all right. And about 3 or 4 years passed by, and the same woman died again, and they took her to the church. And they had already put the top down on the coffin and had her up there in the church, and they were getting ready to take her out to the cemetery, walk to the cemetery, you know how they used to, and carry the thing and put it in the ground. And they started letting, this was the time after the Civil War ended, they had started letting the servants in the house come to the funerals. You know, they'd sit in the back, Mother Lee said, but they'd let them come. And so this black woman was in the very back of the church. And the woman that was dead started beating on the top of the casket. She wasn't dead yet. And Mother Lee said her grandmother told her that colored woman got up and just ran out of that church and ran about 5 miles home. She was so scared. Just took off. Scared her so badly. Mother Lee said she never really found out if the woman, you know she's dead, but, she, you know, don't know why when she really died. Went home many times.
So now her grandmother
told her that. Oh, Mother Lee's full of stories like that. You can get more stories out of her. She just goes on and on and on.
Go from one to another.
Yeah, that's the way she is. And she remembers things very, very clearly and vividly, you know, about her child. And she tells them in the cutest way, you know. I just love to listen to her talk.
Have you talked to Henry?
Keen? Not recently.
I'm not talking about recently.
Last time I talked to him was about a month ago.
Well, he sees things.
You mean on his route?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know that much about it. I just know that he works for
you
him.
You've never been interested in it.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, now you see, when the idea hit me, I haven't given it up since. I think about that every day.
Well, you ought to do it.
And I always, it just makes me think the obvious things, you know, you never think of. People want to go down to Cypress Gardens. Well, it's all right, but You know, there's things right here. Over there where you all used to go and get areas. That's amazing country right
yeah.
in there.
Well, what kind of little things do you like to pick up, guys?
I don't dictate it. I just take what they see.
You mean you take their views on something, maybe? Like if they voice an opinion on something. Or do you just listen to what they got to say?
Yeah.
About anything.
Yeah, I follow them. I've got to be an expert at going along with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I miss the most, and we talk about it a lot.
But I can't do it on horses and things like that, but I don't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do it with the only car. I don't know enough about cars.
Well, I was going to say, one of the things that Guy and I talk about, and when we were growing up, you know, you go down to the corner drugstore at night and sit around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Have a soda maybe or something. And you could talk, and people would linger and talk. Just talk about what was happening. And there's not any place anymore.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think of the old boarding houses. When I was away from home, I'd go to one of those old boarding houses, and there's always plenty to eat, of course. And you'd live there, and it was a family life, and you always had somebody to talk to. You never got lonesome, and you didn't have to stir around and make up conversation with anybody.
Everybody's already there to talk to.
Yes, and read the paper and listen to the radio and.
And Judy's never been in one of those where they put all this great big bowls of food in the middle of the table.
I've seen pictures, you know, where they've, you know, had them, but I've never been in one. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, I miss those. Well, anyhow, you know, a lot of things like that they had.
Well, you know, back then, it was kind of like caring about your neighbor or about somebody. And now if you do that, you're nosy. You're sticking your nose into other people's business.
I wonder.
Now, what are you...
All right, now, let's say that back then, it's just the way people have gotten so individual, you know. And what's mine is my problem and not your problem. And if you try and be empathic toward that person, then they think, well... They're nosy, they're snoopy.
Yeah.
And whereas back then maybe it was that they really, you know, cared about you and wanted to comfort you or something, or knew that you wanted to talk, or maybe they just wanted to talk too. But now if you do that with somebody that you don't know very, very well, they think, oh, that's a snoopy
person.
What are
you saying? What
do you mean?
Well, you gave me the principle, I gave me the case.
All right, like if I, like Jan, this friend of mine.
Yeah.
Now, Jan and I can sit down and we can just about talk about anything. But now, if I was to do that with somebody who wasn't a very close friend of mine, they would think I was nosy if I was inquiring about them.
Yeah.
You know? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Well...
And evidently it wasn't that way back then. You could talk with just about it, you know, anybody. But now other people are afraid of people, I think, to a certain degree too. You know, you just don't open your door to anybody that comes to the door. And I imagine you didn't open it to everybody that came back then. I don't know, I wasn't there. But I imagine you would have opened it a lot more back then than you would have now. And you don't know about the other fellow. You don't know how he operates or what he is or anything. You kind of keep to yourself more so, you know.
Well, I think it depends partly on where you are. Now, Gainesville, I think it would be a little extreme. You know, you get such a concentration there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And that's in C minor.
I went over to Trenton the other day and had my car inspected. And Buck Johnson had the, he does it at his own private garage. And I went every store in town and talked with him. And I think the best conversation talk was over at the drugstore, the pharmacy.
No, it's doing some today.
This,
Don't sit around
slightly. This old fellow was sitting at one of the ice cream things.
All right.
And he had an ice cream.
I wonder how would you and Susan feel about doing just that pull-off.
With his head pushed back. I didn't stop. I went up there to get a candy bar, and forced a suggestion. I just got an ice cream cone. She said 11 cents, 21 cents. I said, that's just about right. What you got? It was 11 cents.
In the morning.
I went around the drugstore.
And
I thought to myself, well, I'll be dead burned. Here I am going around pricing all these things that I don't want when I could go over and talk to the man. And I walked back over there. And he was talking to the two clerks.
I
was the old man?
Yes, around the soda fountain. And I could tell from their face that they weren't interested in the thing he said.
Okay, that sounds a little.
And I noticed he was licking his ice cream. He wasn't just taking a little bite in there. He was just turning it around and licking it all the way around.
Enjoying it.
And I thought to myself, well, now he's deprived. He don't have much.
Okay, fine.
And it's an occasion for him. And he's just trying to talk a little bit. And you know, I got up that close where I could sort of get a word in, and he said something about nitrogen, protein. Well, I said, I didn't know that. I didn't know what he was talking about. Well, sir, he just let those two soda fountain girls go and turn to me and talk solid for the next half hour. He's the one who made the ice cream cones. And he also sells them. And I asked him what his beat was. He said, the state of Florida.
The state of Florida?
Yes, sir. And he knew Mr. Rogers that ran the pharmacy. Mr. Rogers came up there and asked him about his boy. His boy was getting married and graduating from something. And you see, it was just solid talk. Just solid talk. As long as I stayed there. And I stayed there a long time. Well, now, you said it wasn't personal. Well, the right smart of it was personal. Mr. Galbraith was his name, Uncle Jim Galbraith. He talked about himself.
Yeah, but see, he's an older person. He's not a, I'd say this, maybe I'm wrong, that a lot of people like that were like Mother Lee. But now there are two types. There are people like Mother Lee who will in this man, and then there are people like Thrasher who are scared and they won't. But I think it's a rarity in the younger generation to find people who'll do that. If somebody walks up to me on campus and strikes up a conversation with me, I think they're a kook. Because you just don't, you know, you don't know. People just don't do that. Not because it's just not done, you know. Not that it's wrong, but it's just not done. You just don't walk up to somebody and say, How are you, James? I said, well, what kind of a weirdo are you? You know what I mean? Just like you, what would you do if you were just walking down the street and somebody just came up to you and started talking to you?
Junior, let me tell you, if you get in a Greyhound bus and go from here to Waldo, before you get to Waldo, the whole bus will be a beehive of talk. Well, what the hell do you think they're talking about? They've never seen each other before. Now, where have you been all this time?
But the thing, now that's fine. When you have something in common like that with people. Yeah. But you know, like when you're walking around the university or something.
Or Gainesville.
Gainesville.
Well, some parts of Gainesville, I think, it's all right. You just know where you are. I never enjoyed Gainesville never felt at home on the campus.
It's a distant campus. I mean, a very, people.
Yes.
You know, we had a professor that came out and gave us a in-service program out at school. And he really pointed out something that I had never realized it before for a long time. But he said, and he had been down to South America too. And down there, when you talk to people, I mean, like if you pull up, if you're driving a car and pull up in a car beside somebody, they'll turn around and they'll just stare you right straight in the eye and they won't take their eye off of you, just like I'm staring at you right now. And did you notice what you did? You looked away. And that's what people do in the United States. You know, they have very little eye contact. You know, when you pull up to somebody at a traffic light, and you may look over there because you want them to just see what they look like or something, you know, maybe what, but you look right back away. But down there, they just establish this eye contact, and they don't take their eyes off of you for 1 second. They just right through you. You know, and it's hard to do. You want to go, yeah, you know, and look away. You know what I mean? And it's really strange. And if you look at somebody for a long time, they think you're weird. They do. You know, you look at somebody, and you begin to think, well, something's wrong with that person. They're looking at me awful hard. You know, guy?
Well, I haven't run into that situation, you see, much. I talk to people, and I've sort of cultivated that. And I get so much talk, sometimes I'm just dizzy.
Yeah, but the thing is, just like you were doing then, well, you were talking to me, but you weren't looking at me. You were looking over here talking like this, and then finally you turned around and looked. But when you Americans converse, they don't converse like this. They converse kind of like this, you know,
yeah.
Kind of off and around and about, and
yeah.
Occasional eye contact to bring the conversation together.
Yeah.
But they don't have a one-way street on the thing.
No. Well,
yeah, they just look you right in the eye and talk to you, whether you understand them or not.
Yeah.
They talk to you, and they,
yeah.
You know, and just pull up. You walk down the street, and people just look at you. Not because you're an American. They do that to everybody. They just look. They're so much more with their eyes than anything else.
Well, I hadn't thought about that.
Than we are.
Bet you Henry's noticed things out on that beat of his.
You ought to go.
He don't
guy.
Talk to you all about it because he thinks you all are
uninterested, probably.
Uninterested, yeah. That's the reason so many people don't talk. I don't talk about my cattle out there to people because I think they're not interested.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be bored to death.
But you know another thing, guys, you also have to kind of, I think you have to kind of know what you're looking for. Now, some people can just, now like you could go out and talk to people and pick up so many more things than I ever could, you know, by listening.
Yeah.
Because you know what you're looking for, you know, and you realize the value of it, whereas maybe somebody like Henry wouldn't realize the value of it. And it's just a conversation, you know, just chit-chat. But whereas you really value something like that, he didn't put a value on it. And he might have heard a million things that to you would be very, very valuable, but to him they're just scores or something, you know?
Well, now, you see, I don't know. That's right. Let me tell you, Judy, I won't do it. But I talk to these chaps in my classes about things like that, you see. Faulkner reports on reports, you see. It's just six deep in anything he writes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what he did, but it's what he's, you know, just talked about all his life. And you see, they don't have the right to read him or a good many of the other American writers if they don't do that, if they don't go out and join Eli Witch. You see, that's a tradition. Old who's the one who who's the one who wrote the Congo? Don't you know? He's went west and walked and talked and lectured and Lindsay, Basil Lindsay.
Oh.
Now I have both of those little books. The library had one copy, or has one copy, and I took them out, and I don't return them. They're out of print. Very simple little things that he did when he was young. He made a trip down Kentucky into South Carolina, West Carolina. That's not as innocent as the one he did in the Kansas. He went to Kansas, the wheat field. And he reports. And he hadn't learned at that time how to report. And a lot of times you can learn more from somebody who hadn't quite got there.
Mm-hmm.
then you can have somebody like Faulkner, you see, who's master at it, and you don't realize how much he's telling you, really. Basil Lindsay. Now that's just, it's horrible writing. But he's not embellishing it, you see. He's not decorating it, just straight. What he saw, and he didn't see much. But he looked. And he walked.
That's right, he walked.
I remember one thing you said about tramps on the railroad. They weren't real tramps. They were mechanized. He was a real tramp. And their routine was so inflexible. Now that's one thing I've noticed in talking to people. they're hard to get two people a lot of times to talk. Their routine gets to be pretty hard. And the young people are harder to get to than the older ones. Take a couple that's just married, you see, the little girl has got to set the food on the table.